We all want to be at peace in this life that we are. Free from dissatisfactions, from stress, suffering, being at ease rather than being diseased. And that's what our practice addresses. Not to create this, because this is who we are, but to enable us to see what and how we generate or is generated dis-ease, unsatisfactoriness, or dissatisfied, suffering, stress, and worse. In the mornings, I've begun our sittings with a recital all together of the Gatha, the verse of atonement, of being at one . Sometimes it's called confession, but I don't particularly like the word, not because there's anything wrong with the word, but because of the overlay we have for it in English, of judgment, of blame. And in the verse that we've been reciting, I've added a line to the traditional lines. So, first line translate as, the Gatha itself comes from a sutra that is connected to the practice of Samantabhadra, who's Bodhisattva of compassion, sometimes known in Sino-Japanese as Fugen. Samantabhadra is Sanskrit. So the first line is, all harmful actions ever committed by me, or sometimes the word harmful is translated as evil, but again, that tends to get us trapped in English into ideas of good and evil, not only in English. I mean, there's a heavy overlay in the Christian tradition with the word confession and evil, but it's not just Christian, it's any dualistic tradition tends to add evil with judgment and blame. So, all harmful actions ever committed by me. And then I've added the line, all harmful actions ever committed to me. Because it's these sort of actions and the residue of those actions in our life, in our way of approaching our life, in our, call it the karmic habits, emotion, thought, that creates difficulties in the present moment, which is always how and what our life is, just this present moment. And our confusion and difficulties of this present moment of ongoing change with our judgments about what could have, should have, what shouldn't and couldn't, and so forth, with our reactions to self and others that we hold on to. Even though, of course, our actions are born of this humanness that we share with others, this humanness that manifests in harmful actions born of body, mouth, and thought, which of course is used as a covering all basis on account of greed, anger, confusion, which again are human tendencies. As I said yesterday, they come with our DNA. They're part of being human in our reacting, in our having difficulty with the constant change that is this life that we are, whether constant change so-called happening to me or so-called happening to others, whether so-called happening to the world, because we tend to interpret those. We interpret those in ways that we make difficulties for ourselves and others rather than experiencing what our life is as it is, as opposed to experiencing what our life is as we would like it to be or not to be, whether it's what we want so-called my life to be or so-called someone else's life to be, doesn't make a difference. Whether it's having to do with people or circumstances, having to do with those close to us or not close to us. See, that's where the disturbance to our peace is. There's nothing that disturbs our peace except our own reactions to the circumstances that occur. Now, of course, the circumstances that occur are what feeds our belief, which is why we do the verse in the morning to remind us that to acknowledge what's so, and to acknowledge what we carry along as habits when those habits arise. They don't arise because we decide for them to arise, but they arise as part of this process of being who we are. They arise as part of the process that is embodied in this life that we each share. It's embodied in the life, in our physical, in our mental, and in all the other ways. It's embodied there, and yet we all have the ability and the opportunity, if when we see that embodying of habit, the embodying of, we could call it greed, anger, ignorance. You could use any sort of names you want. If you want, you could say embodying of the PTSD of, in other words, your trauma of having lived and the trauma manifests in the present moment reaction. And those reactions and the, call it, resulting dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness, or to use a broader Buddhist term, dukkha, are the opportunity for us to do what's skillful for this moment practice. Not in order to get us something else, but to enable us to be the peace, to be the awakened life that we are, or if I say it differently, to be liberated from what otherwise seems to entangle us and others in stress and suffering. What entangles many humans in harmful actions, and which then perpetuates. I especially feel that it's important for us to add the line, even though it's not in the tradition, in the traditional text. The text is from probably first century Indian subcontinent. The harm done to us because of how much we tend to sometimes automatically go to that as justification for continuing our entanglements, our greed, anger, or just plain confusion and confusing unskillful habits. So, of course, reciting it doesn't mean that it's over. Reciting the verse is to remind us to be at one within the circumstances as they arise in this moment, as the cause and effect, constant change manifests right now. Right now in our life, right now when someone speaks to us, right now in our reaction to not getting what we want, right now in our reaction to getting what we don't want, right now in being confused, right now in judging, why did I make that mistake, and so on and so forth. See, always that's our practice opportunity. And just because you know this doesn't take care of it. Of course it's helpful, but it doesn't take care of it. See, what it does is it encourages and nurtures us in being able to make the effort when it's called for. This isn't something new. This is something that teachers, ancestors have stressed for a long time in many different ways. Always the point is very simple. There's a 17th century Zen master known as Bankei. Some of you might be familiar with him. He says it, in spite of, this is of course in an English translation, so subject to all that, in spite of the fact that you all came into this world with unborn Buddha mind and nothing else, you are partial to yourselves, so you want to make things move in your own way. You lose your temper, become contentious. Then you think, I have not lost my temper. What that fellow says is so unreasonable that he made me lose it. And so you fix anxiously on his words and inadvertently transform your vitally important Buddha mind into a fighting demon. You keep on worrying yourself over this unimportant matter, churning over and over in your mind. And you may even get your way in the end. But in that case, you fail in your ignorance to realize that your concern over this matter was in fact meaningless. Ignorance is the cause of this animal-like existence. So you change your vitally important Buddha mind, which you are still totally ignorant of, into an animal of the first rank. If you want to use the word Buddha mind, or unborn, or undying, we are essentially acknowledging this life that we are. This life that, you want to say it a different way, is this peace that we all are. I shouldn't even call it anything, because then we want to make a theory of it, which of course makes it difficult for ourselves and others. Even using words like Buddha or unborn, or it's not that we need to have a name of it, because it is who we are. See, this being satisfied, being liberated, being able to serve, liberating other beings. We're only liberated from what we put on ourselves when there's no need to do that. So we have to have this great difficulty of sitting in here on a warm day, which isn't very difficult at all, because what we're doing here is very simple. We are experiencing our life as it is. And we are opening up, if I say it that way, the habits of wanting this ongoing change to be this particular way, whatever particular way we decide on in this moment. Of course, it keeps changing what we want, as some of you are very aware of. What you want for yourself, what you want for someone else, what you don't want for yourself, what you don't want for someone else, despite the fact that we live fundamentally, and this is what I talked about yesterday, in this world of ongoing change. This body-mind, ongoing change. This universe, all the people we meet, all the other beings we share this life with, nothing but ongoing change. If we name it, yesterday I talked a little about it in terms of anicca, the impermanence, or you could use different word. Inconstancy, some people say, ongoing change. Doesn't matter which word we use. It's the simple fact of the way it is. The way it is right now. The way it is right now. And we can see when we have difficulty with it, as soon as words like I wish, it didn't used to, it should have, it could have, how come, and various other words. How, when we add those on to the way it is, rather than embracing the perfection, or embracing, or as one of my teachers used to say, appreciating our life. appreciating our life doesn't mean there isn't action to do. As I mentioned, Suzuki Roshi used to say, perfect as is, and you could use some improvement. Now, there's appreciating our life means we have the opportunity to serve by doing what's called for. So that's why we start the morning in Sesshin, or we started these past few days, and we'll continue the next few days with the Gatha of atonement, of being at one, because appreciating means being at one with what we are at one as. See, we are at one as this life, and yet if we acknowledge it, then we've got that extra force for a moment to help us, to support us, to nurture us, to do what's called for this moment. Easy, just breathe. Easy, just be experiencing. Hard, just breathe. Hard, just experiencing. It's hard in the midst of the force of reactive habit that keeps on pushing in our life. Hard in the when we buy into the force of the chatter mind or chatter body or the stories that come up of themselves, and we're in the midst of them. Their coming up is just natural. Nothing wrong with them coming up when you're sitting. The issue is, when they come up, do you grab onto them or not? That's our choice, the grabbing on. And even the grabbing on, fine. When we notice the grabbing on, that habit is the opportunity to cease. Just that little pivot moment is the opportunity we have. And the pivot moment is right now. That's the only moment we have, truly. Even though we believe we have other things. See? The only moment we have is the what life presents right now. See? Being, experiencing, residing, appreciating, whatever word you want to use. But it comes natural to each of us. And yet, it seems so unnatural because we buy into beliefs, habits, and so forth. Okay. I've talked enough to get us started, because the point of talking is to encourage and nurture our practice together. You don't need to remember anything I particularly say. In fact, we never need to remember anything, except, of course, if you have a list and you're going shopping. And I used to always just go shopping without any lists, but in the past number of years I've discovered that if I don't write it down, I don't remember. But in Zen practice, you don't have to write it down, because the universe of your life will keep supporting and allowing you to notice if you do what enables you to support your life, which is whether it's a Zen, whether it's being, experiencing during the day, being present, and all the other things that each of us does to help us be who we are. It's funny to say that we need help, and yet we need help because the other habits, the, as Bhante said, being partial to ourself seems so natural. And I'll get to that either tomorrow or the next day, because that's the third of the three marks of existence, the three lakshana, which I mentioned yesterday, that are one way of articulating the Buddha teaching or the Buddha awakening. Of course, there is no Buddha teaching. That itself is extra. If we say there is such a thing, we're making something extra. Don't have to remember any of those things, but still, it's a useful support until we don't need it. Okay, I'll stop now and see if we can explore this together. Yes.
You kind of give me a finite definition of practice. I've heard many, many, many words. Okay, about that. But then today it's just kind of like you say being there with the change, and then if you grab hold of it, go release it, that sort of thing. And I guess that would be so much playing piano and things like that. But that's what life is. Is just to whatever you would experience to be in or with it at that time. And then if you do decide to grasp hold of it or build a story around it, that's where perhaps I get in trouble. And maybe that's where I learned to, as you put it last time I saw you, is just to take the deep breath, or as I said, you know, the practice. And it just allows you to continue.
To embrace, to be intimate as the life moment. It's not so much that we decide to make difficulties. They're this beginningless habit, whether we call them greed, anger, and confusion, or ignorance, or something else. They're habits that have their own momentum. Reactive habits occur faster than we can think. They occur when they occur, not because we're carrying them along, but because the forces of the universe that are our life bring them forth. We don't have to go looking for where they are and to get rid of them or any such thing. But when they occur, it's our opportunity to either continue them by, or to notice and therefore make the practice effort so that we don't, as was said, be partial to ourselves. We don't buy into the belief or the habit or the action. And it doesn't matter at what point we notice what we want is, what should I say, clashing with what is. And that we what we want is getting us in trouble. Or getting other people in trouble. And of course that's getting us in trouble. See, so it doesn't matter if it's so-called us doing harm to others or others doing harm to us. Except of course that we use, oh, he did that to me. She said that to me. That's justification for, and you figure out what a justification, and you figure out how long you want to keep on holding that. Some people hold that for a lifetime. Or
I have a habit of having a heavy foot, which is for people in this room are aware. And on my way home from Arizona, I stopped at this, well, went to this real little town, and there's this truck parked straight looking at me. And the next thing I know, and the guy comes up and says, how's your day going? I says, it's going pretty good till about 10 minutes ago or 10 seconds ago. He just kind of chuckled. And he says, well, you're going fast, you know, at the 35 mile an hour, so you're going over 50. And I says, but I thought I was coming out of the curve. Of course, I'm going to make up an excuse. And he says, no, the sign's right down there. See it right down there? I said, yes, you're right. So he went back, and then he checked, I guess, my registration and everything like that. And he came back and says, well, he says, you were going busy, but I'm not going to put down that it was on an interstate. I'll put down that it's a rural road and things like that. And we Please drive slower.
Good.
But
see, he was just reminding you of being practice,
right.
And he, you know, he was giving you the opportunity, and he was giving you another opportunity to see whether you were going to carry it along with being upset with him afterwards, and all the stories we then
right.
make up, being, as to use that phrase, partial to ourselves. We'll call it self-centeredness. See, it's our life is wonderful as it is, and there's opportunities to improve, and we just take care of it as best we can. And improve doesn't mean it's going to go the way we want it. Improve includes us getting sick, getting old, being weaker than we used to, other people doing what we don't want them to, people not doing what we want them to, even though they agreed, and even though we made plans, and so on and so forth. And being present in the midst of that, being embracing of that, embodying it, because that's where we have the opportunity to be at peace, to be liberated from what creates stress and dissatisfaction. That's the only thing we need to be liberated from. Otherwise, we're already liberated. We're already awake, except we put ourselves to sleep. That's not a blame. It just happens. It's just, you know, that's the opportunity of being human. See, it just happens. Just like when I let go of the stick, it just falls. There's no blame in the stick for falling, and if it was more fragile, it might break. And that's the wonderful part of practice. The wonderful part of our life is that we can discover this for ourselves, and we therefore can, if I use the word, liberate ourselves and others, or serve others and serve our own life, to be at peace, to be joyous in doing just ordinary everyday life that we are. Okay. I mean, this is your opportunity to bring up what you want.
Well,
yes.
This talk was very useful. I mean, it's very relevant to things that have been going on. I can see that it's like my worst enemy in some of this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I'm here. I don't have to be thinking about anything else. But being right here, whatever's
mm-hmm.
happening, is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I do notice some consternation sometimes about, other things, a trigger point, say, or a memory or something that's happening in my reaction to it.
Okay? Yeah.
So I can see all that. And we've already... we've already at other times, discussed that it's not like there's a formula. So I'm not asking mm-hmm. for that again. I'm just saying though that it's fascinating to me. So in some ways, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That the same being that can see that still gets sucked in, and I can say the same thing you say in a way. It's a habit. It's just a habit. But it would really be great. It would really be great to just really go to that next. Sometimes I can break that habit. Sometimes it's not. I can let things go. I mean,
uh-huh.
particularly things that happen here. I notice I let them go. Things happen. Because I have certain roles, right, responsibilities, and I know, forgot that, didn't do that, whatever. But it's like okay. But when there's certain environments where there's a I guess there's a little bit more of an ego investment, if you will, perhaps, or something like that. I don't know what it is, but where I just, that comes up, and I really would love to be able to let it go. Just let it go.
One of the things is that the focus of our practice life here is on practice, which is on being this moment experiencing and clarifying what and how we get entangled. Clarifying and not, what should I say, supporting the self-partiality, the self-centeredness, whereas many other institutions are built on self-centeredness and without a sense of the continuous natural harm that comes from focusing that. Caught in self-centered dream, only suffering. See, that's those first two marks of existence, so to speak, say that it's natural. If you're caught in self-centeredness, or no, actually that they don't talk about self-centeredness because that's the third one. I'll talk about that tomorrow. But caught in the ongoing change and our reaction to it, it's natural. It's to be expected that there's going to be stress and suffering. It's just like letting go of this and it falls. It's going to happen. If we buy into greed, anger, and confusion or ignorance, there is going to be harm and suffering. Can't be otherwise with humans. Sometimes it's just a low level of stress. Sometimes it's backbiting and viciousness. And sometimes it's even worse. And we see people getting crazy, even road rage. Someone else gets faster than me and cuts me off. When we get to that rest stop there, I've got this crowbar under the seat and I know what I'm going to do when I see them pulling over. So that's why it's up to us in those institutions, in those places, in those realms of our life to carry our practice along there. Because we're not going to be reminded unless we create the reminders that, you know, could be go into a store and you see, how come they advertised that was going to be $100 and now there's none of those left, but the exact same thing is there for $110. They're cheating me. I'm not going to let them do that. And we go to a clerk, or if we could find someone, and we start mouthing off and we get justified and so on and so forth. Those institutions aren't designed to imagine. If there was a store where they had an advertisement last week and this week it was $125, and underneath the sign up for $125 was a little note, ongoing change. So it's up to us to take our practice along, so to speak, in the various realms, because not only does it allow us to appreciate our life, but it also gives the opportunity for others in those realms. See, that's our serving all beings. And some institutions are more designed in that direction than others. But most institutions that humans live in, that doesn't mean just here in the middle of Illinois, but humans throughout space and time, are not designed in that direction. Most institutions are designed around self-aggrandizement in different forms. And it's natural. It's nothing bad. It's come, like I said, it comes with the DNA of being human. Even though unborn Buddha is exactly what being human is, if I use that kind of word, at the same time, along comes greed, anger, ignorance born of body, mouth, and thought. It comes because of the intelligence and embodiment that we are. And, you know, now with genetic studies, we discover all the other tendencies that we're born with, both in terms of genetic inheritance and epigenetic inheritance, so we get them from our distant ancestors and recent ancestors, and they take on different forms, whether it's in terms of our short-temperedness or our compassion or lack of compassion or fear or all the other things. And then it's, of course, how we've grown up and so forth. And nevertheless, at each moment, it's only, if I use such words, the unborn Buddha that is our life. Unborn, undying means it's not something that we have to add on or get extra or is dependent upon the conditions. It's nothing but our life. So we always have the opportunity to free ourselves from what creates stress and suffering. So, therefore, unfortunately and fortunately, you have to create it in the other realms, whether at work or with friends or with so-called frenemies. Yes, Antonio.
I've been noticing lately, the last few times things have happened, like I set my coffee up last night because I have to get up at 4, which is 3 hours earlier than usual. And when I got up this morning and flipped it on and went to brush my teeth, I came back and forgot to put the pot underneath the coffee's all over the floor. And I noticed my reactivity was gone. It was like, oh, okay, make it over again. Put it in there, do it. But I noticed sitting, I'm reactive to other stuff, and it's in the moments of this sort of quiet space where I'm just watching, it's almost as if there's a quality about me looking for something to get reactive about. And I'm just wondering about that moment, because I've been working with that, but lately I've been saying it's unimportant, because I know it's unimportant. It's not real. I'm making it up. It's just generating of its own accord. And I'm just wondering, is that sidestepping or cutting practice back?
I think you have to find what's useful to practice with that grasping.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the grasping self-centeredness. That's the caught.
Mm-hmm.
That almost is looking for something sometimes when there isn't some other particular thing happening. Because, I won't say because, it's in the midst of resting in the quiet moment, then that, well, I've got to think about something. I've got to have something to cogitate and worry and plan about. Or, you know, let's see. I mean, it's not as if our life doesn't offer enough, and yet, if I say it, we quiet down and we're not being any one story in particular, or one habit, or one drama. It's not okay to have no drama going on, so I've got to have something. Otherwise, what's going to be? I mean, it's just here. It's boring. It's... Unfortunately, there aren't any offered next to our seats in the Zendo.
We can change that.
Well, one piece leads to two pieces.
Vibration.
And I love chocolate as much as anyone else. Well, not, I can't say as much as anyone else, as much as others who love chocolate. But then it's got to be the kind of chocolate that I like. I prefer the dark, not the milk. I mean, you know, milk's okay if I have to, but, you know, it's got to be right. And we go on from there.
I don't know if this fits in with what you were saying, Antonia, but I heard a story on the radio several weeks ago about I don't know, it was some kind of place for people that had been homeless to go to. And they talked about that often when people came there, they became disoriented because their whole lives, the whole purpose of their lives, how they spent all their time was, you know, finding a place to sleep. And when that was just there, they were lost. And when I heard that, I just thought, well, it sounds sort of, I don't know, familiar to me, that a particular kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, fixation about arranging everything, you know, a lot of it having to do with other people, that seems like the purpose. And that without that, it seems at times too simple that it could just be okay to not keep engaging in that. But then coming to Sesshin and having the support and having the encouragement, just such a sense of relief about not needing to do that. That I just appreciate very much.
And that also gives us the opportunity to see how, even though we don't need to do any particular thing in Sesshin, especially since sitting is straightforward, the temperature is somewhat controlled, there's food, there's a place to sit, to sleep, no one's going to attack us. Even there, we start becoming antsy with the dull boredom, simplicity, straightforwardness, and we have to generate something because of the unwillingness somehow of self to not have any drama, not have anything to do, not be the center stage, to give ourselves away, to forget ourselves in this moment. So sometimes we have to give extra candy of practice tasks for those who can't just be this life, this zazen that reveals the whole universe right here. And that's most of us most of the time. Yes.
I can't tell you the number of times that comes up for me. It's something I struggle with, because you start to settle, and then I'm a good word that you use, I'm bored. And I say to what comes up is, so what's the value of this? I understand that in one way I could take that off the cushion and be with what I'm doing, but I start to value that this is only to help me be with what I'm doing when I get off the cushion. But this is so boring right here.
And to be willing and able to be boring is to, in a sense, to go deeper into being who we are. It's almost like it's the border. You have to go through the boredom, because the boredom is our habit of judging and naming certain states, and they surround that, they enclose us and limit us within what we call self-boredom. The boredom means that the self doesn't get to constantly be reinforced, and whether with positive or negative doesn't make a difference if I'm explaining it. The excitement doesn't get generated. The partiality, the me, doesn't get fed. Boredom is, in a sense, the opportunity to give ourselves away to, and to be able to taste what it is to be, if I use the word, alive and awake right now. To be at peace right now. But it's too boring, so I've got to do something else. So it's almost like you have to be willing, have the strength and ability to be bored in order to go past that, if I use that kind of word. I won't say there's anywhere else you're going, and yet it seems that way, so I'll talk in that way. So part of practice is to be willing to be bored, because of how strong a reaction we have to being bored. See? That's how strong our reaction is to forgetting our self-centeredness. Because if I can't be partial to myself, then what? See? Boredom, in a way, is a flip side, if I explain it, of fear. Because we're afraid that if I stay bored, it's going, I don't know what we're afraid of. I shouldn't even name it, because if I say that, that's already too much. So, fear is important in our practice and important in our life, because of how much it runs us, because of how much it nurtures self concern and self-centeredness. Is the fear of what if I didn't do this, what would happen to me? And it's the same boredom activates or touches that fear that I've got to do something. Okay, I've got to think about tomorrow, then I don't have to deal with this fear. I've got to figure out what I'm going to do about that person who last week said such and such to me, and I'll remember when I see him tomorrow. You know, make sure he doesn't say that again and do that. So in a sense, they're there. they're part of the mix of practice. So boredom is great. It's a good sign. Yes.
I am just the opposite.
Uh-huh.
I live a very quiet life.
Uh-huh.
I don't have much family except for my cousin in California. Uh-huh. No, I'm not from there. This cousin is 80, and she gave a sit-down dinner party of 150 people for her birthday. So you kind of get an idea.
Uh-huh.
Raise 7 children. Go, go, go. She doesn't want to come visit me because it's boring. I had her feelings. And then I thought about it, well, that's just Carol, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really not happy at my place because she's bored. Well, all right.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
That's the way it is?
Yeah. And I have to make an appointment for her to telephone me. If I get 3 telephone calls a year, it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
such a busy life. And I'm just the opposite. I don't want to go visit her because it's too much high drop. And I just get lost in all this going on, and I never visit Carol. So
you could make a deal with her. Carol, I'll visit you once a year and have the excitement and work with, and that'll be my opportunity. And you visit me once a year. You could pick the time of year, and you know we'll just try it once.
I've tried that sort of thing, and I figured out that the way we were going, how many possible visits we might have.
Well,
yeah, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty.
There was someone else over here? No?
Well, I was just going to say that so I'm sitting here suffering this back pain because I managed to injure my back yesterday while I was vacuuming. And so I'm trying to, there's nothing to figure out. And I did it to myself, even though I've spent many precious moments here blaming the world, blaming the vacuum cleaners, blaming it. But it's nobody's fault. It hurt when I started, and I should have said, I did it to myself. Stop it, you're going to be sorry. But I just pushed through it, because that's how I tend to deal with pain. I just pushed through. And I've got all these pain issues, and I know better. And I haven't really gone deeply enough yet to understand what prompts me to do that, to drive through pain when I know I'm hurting myself. It's got to be, there's something. And I don't want to think it's because I'm bored, because I wasn't bored. I like sitting, you know? I really do. Well, that's not true. Yeah, you know, I'm never bored when I'm sitting. I should just say I'm never bored when I'm sitting. I mean, a lot of people are bored. I have a husband who's bored when he's sitting. You know, so anyway, I'm trying to figure out why in the heck I did that to myself when everything was going right and I was back to exercise class and, you know, going 3 or 4 times a week, I got a Fitbit, I'm doing 15,000 steps a day, look. And for some crazy reason, I just pushed through that pain, and now I'm making up stories that, oh my God, this is going to last 3 weeks, and I'm not going to be able to go on vacation, you know, to the point where it's making me crazy.
So,
and I'm trying to forgive myself.
Good. I'm sorry you're in pain. And what's important now is to see what to do now. Don't have to try to figure out about what could have, should have happened back then, because it, our memories and all of that is just more confusion and not very accurate. What's useful is to keep being present now, both in terms of doing the pain, but also in terms of your activities, so that when the, oh, this hurts comes up, you can respond. See, it's always our opportunities responding in the moment with, and noticing, if you add that story, I should push through, I shouldn't give in to this, oh, whatever other story it is, who knows what it was at the moment, doesn't matter now. What matters now is what's skillful to do right now. What's skillful to do right now. And our life will keep offering opportunities. Don't worry. You don't have. There's no ancient past you need to figure out now. There's just now. And now will keep offering you opportunities in the process of life itself for all sorts of things that need to get cleared up. Only what needs to get cleared up is right now. The, call it the self-partiality, the self-centeredness, the confusion, or whatever. That's our only practice realm. Because the truthful thing is, there's, you can't do anything about back then. You can do, if it comes up right now, you could reflect on it right now, but that's it. Don't have to go figuring it out, because no matter what you figure out, there's going to be more thinking about it. And unless there's something you could do right now with that thinking, there's nothing to be done. Now, if you were going down and standing there with a vacuum cleaner, you might get to sense again what you were doing that you didn't need to do, or that was harmful to do. That's something else. That's a different kind of exercise. But walking around and thinking about what did I do then, and why did I do it, and what if I did it differently, and whose fault, and you know, I always do this to myself, or I should have known better, or you know, if only, and what will happen, just entangles us more. So enjoy even the pain. Do what helps reduce the pain, whether it's ice or whatever else. And you know, we have a long open sitting. If you need to, you can sit flat on your back if that's necessary, or supports in the chair. Yeah. We can't even go back one moment. I know, you know, there's times, you know, you drop something and it breaks and you go, oh, I should have, how could I have? And you go on and on about what you broke. But of course, you can't do anything. You can pick it up and say, oh, can I repair these two pieces with some glue? Good. Oh, I can't. Oh, well, what do I have to do about it? Whose is this? Do I need to replace it? Does it need to be replaced? Yeah. Oh, it's because of this thing that I tripped on. Okay, maybe I need to fix that little place that's not smooth on the ground or whatever. But we love to micromanage, what do they call it? Monday quarterbacking?
Monday morning
quarterbacking. You know, we'd love to do that, because that just makes our mind generate all sorts of self-importance, which we can't do anything about. When, out of reactive habit, we say something that's harmful to someone else, we could say, I'm sorry, I spoke before I thought, I didn't notice what I was saying, or whatever. We can't take it back. There's a story. It's too much. Once we say something, we can't take it back. Once we do something, we can't take it back. So it's much better to take care of what we can now. And if we have to, we say, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And if they do, they do. And if they don't, you know, then you get the ticket. And if we try to give an excuse, sometimes that gets a worse ticket. Okay.
Well, since we started with an Al Kanick story, we'll end with one. Al was driving Devinda and I back from session.
That's a long time ago.
And We were getting fairly close to Springfield, and I was in the back seat, and Linda was in the front passenger, and it seemed to me we were going kind of fast. So I looked up at the speedometer, and it said 85. And I said, Al, this is a 65 limit area. You're going kind of fast, aren't you? And Al said, I never get a speeding ticket. Well, guess what happened in the words are no more out of his mouth than the lights in the side of his
mouth. Was that proceeding?
And coming back from Kashmir was such a good point. The universe is always there to teach us something.
Right.
Especially when we need it the most.
But we all have to acknowledge that each of us can do this. It's not about any other person. It's each of us, when we're not present, we don't quite stop at the stop sign. We raced through the yellow and maybe the red a little, and so on and so forth. So it's important to see that it isn't any particular person. Each of us, when we get stuck in these self-habits, do things that aren't always the most skillful. And therefore our practice is keep being right where we are. Right where we are. Not where we could, should. And then we have the peace, even though at first sometimes that seems dull and boring. So
I'd like a little clarification on something that Diana was talking about. Did I hear you say that it's not useful to go back and re-examine or re-explore why, well, in your case, Diane, why you heard no but you didn't stop?
I don't think it's useful to keep going back and back and back around it unless it comes up now and there's something skillful to be done with it now. But to keep thinking, oh, I should have, oh, I, you know, how come? That's the because that tends to feed it tends to feed a thinking entanglement.
Sure.
And a self-entanglement that we really can't do anything skillful with, because we really don't often see very much about what happened.
Right. I was thinking more in line of just doing the deep exploration. I know I've done this for myself, of when I knew that, you know, my best option was this, why did I choose that? Mm-hmm. And then I look and I see, oh, because I was trying to please someone else. I wasn't listening to myself. And so then to see that, oh, I have this unconscious behavior of trying to do for the other rather than really listen to myself. So then it gives me more insight the next time that happens. I can stop or learn from it again. So I didn't know if that's what you were saying to Diane or not.
There are times when it's useful to be present and reflect, but there's times when it entangles us in ways that add blame and judgment and just keeps us thinking about it rather than being here and doing what's called for now, given that the situation is the way it is. See, in a sense, practice is being as we truly are rather than going back. As we truly are now includes thoughts coming up and memories, but it's as it is now. Sometimes we would rather dramatize past events and even past self-blame or past other blame or past stories than be, let's say, a non-dramatized present moment, which has nothing of any great event occurring. Okay, we can stop. And we'll tomorrow probably continue with the third of the three characteristics. If not tomorrow, the next day. I never know what I plan isn't always what I do. I'm sorry to say, because other circumstances make something else more appropriate. So, good. Thank you.